I'm Algernon Cash. The soaring price of eggs have sort of grabbed the attention of restaurant owners. That's been going on for quite a while right now. But recently, the high prices have started to come on the radar of ordinary consumers. In recent months, the complaints about the price of a dozen eggs have grown and grown. Here in North Carolina, the average cost of a dozen eggs in North Carolina was $1.72 in 2021. Today's price hovers somewhere around $6, and everybody wants to know why. So I've invited Marlo Ivey, who is a third-generation farmer here in Eastern North Carolina. This week, she is locking in to explain what's driving the cost of eggs. Marlo, how are you today? How are
you? Good, Algernon. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I guess let's jump in it because everybody wants to know.
Yeah.
Why are the price of eggs so high? And, you know, anytime you start seeing prices go up on anything, whether it's a good or a service, consumers start to think that there's some collusion or price fixing going on amongst farmers out there. And so farmers are really taking a lot of the blame right now for this higher price of eggs. So I want to hear from you. Is there any price fixing going on? Are farmers making windfall profits off of eggs?
No, farmers are not making windfall prices over egg. The number one reason that people don't probably realize that's happening in the poultry industry and in egg production right now is the disease called high path avian influenza. So that is a disease that is called by wild migratory birds, and it has infected our domestic flocks and caused catastrophic damages within the poultry industry. So that is the number one reason that your cost of eggs has gone up in the grocery store, is because farmers like me are out here, you know, fighting some biosecurity issues. And that's why it's so important to have biosecurity on our farms, because of high path avian influenza.
So when you, when you talk about this virus that's obviously spread amongst the birds themselves, is what you mean. Mm-hmm. I guess what you're saying, and you're trying to connect that to the idea that just the demand for the number of eggs, right, has been high or has remained high, but the actual number of birds that can produce or lay eggs have been, once again, you've got politicians and bureaucrats who are coming up with policies that have really unintended consequences. I don't think, you know, I always like to remind people, I don't think necessarily an elected official or any administrator in any government agency, I don't think they show up for work every day thinking about how they can harm Americans and small businesses. I don't think that's the intention. I don't believe that's the intended consequence. Normally, a lot of times these decisions, these policy decisions are being made because they think that there's a higher value. There's something that they're trying to aspire to. But then there's these unintended consequences in the case of eggs, where all of a sudden you artificially limit the supply that's available. Right. And then that has a huge impact on the ability of farmers to meet demand. You know, I'm writing an article right now, Marlo, for the Carolina Journal. It should actually come out this week for my audience that follows the Carolina Journal. And I talk a little bit about the soaring price of eggs. I talk a little bit about some of the pressures that's being placed on poultry farmers right now. And one of the things that I discovered that was pretty interesting to me is that, you know, Americans, especially North Carolinians, we eat a lot of eggs.
And, yeah, and you know, a lot of bacon.
We eat about 248 eggs a year. So that's almost an egg a day for some people. If you're like me, I eat probably two boiled eggs probably every single morning. So the demand for eggs is just at an all-time high. The other thing that I started to learn about that I want you to comment on is they talk a little bit about how the expenses associated with caring for these birds. Right. The food that you have to feed them, I guess even the fuel associated with purchasing all that food that you have to feed these birds. With some of the inflationary pressure that we see in the economy right now, talk a little bit about how that's impacting farmers and then also the price we might see in the grocery store.
Sure. Well, whenever you have those kind of situations happen to farmers, when you're seeing fuel prices, fertilizer prices, sometimes triple and double, you're going to see that in that cost reflected in the grocery store. You know, the farmer isn't seeing that. I mean, we're having to pay these extra expenses and not getting it back in our pocket. So that's not what the farmer says. That's what the market and the packing plants and everything else kind of set, and it trickles back down on the farmer. For somebody that has a laying operation, I'm not in the poultry business specifically. I'm a North Carolina pig farmer, but I don't think people realize how much effort it takes to get an egg into a, you know, a carton of eggs. You know, these how the animals are, and especially the layers are taken care of. The eggs are graded. They have to be watched. They have to be, you know, a chicken lays an egg every, I think it's 28 hours or 24 hours, sometimes a little bit earlier than that. So these chickens are having to be checked constantly to gather the eggs. I mean, that's a, you know, a twice a day, maybe sometimes 3 day of process to actually collect the eggs, depending on what kind of production style you're using. So people don't realize how much of the input of, you know, going to put these kind of inputs back onto the farm affect the bottom line in the grocery store, if that makes sense. If the cost of fuel was doubling, well, it's costing us twice as much to get those eggs to your grocery store, if that makes sense.
So why do you think, and I started the conversation today with a little bit of a joke about farmers price fixing and making windfall profits. But the reality is, if you were to walk around any community, especially a big city like Winston-Salem, I'm sure a community like Greensboro, High Point, cities that tend to be a little bit more dislocated from the rural areas like where you are in Eastern North Carolina. Why is the automatic assumption that farmers are colluding and price fixing?
I guess my question kind of goes back to you is, what do they think that we're doing, that we're actually setting the prices for what's getting done, or the packer is?
Well, I think what it is, and when I think what it is, and I've got a lot of smart people in my own audience, but, you know, it's business people, people that have degrees and so forth. I think what it is just not an education on how the actual supply chain itself works. So if you are a family of four in Winston-Salem, and you go through maybe two or three cartons of eggs in you know, a week, depending on, you know, how often you're making breakfast and other items, you just automatically assume those eggs come directly from the farmer. The farmer sells those eggs to Foodline, and Foodline sells those eggs to the customer. You and I, who are privy to a little bit more information, a little bit more knowledge, we understand it. But how can farmers extend that education down so that the ordinary consumer doesn't continue to demonize farmers?
I think it's a great question. I think it's something that especially a millennial farmer like me is battling every single day. I feel like you and I especially understand the disconnect that the consumer has with the farmer. You know, the average farmer right now is 64 years old. I can't tell you how many times when I tell people I'm a farmer, they're like, oh, well, you don't look like a farmer. Well, I mean, what am I supposed to, I think in a mind as a child that we are, you know, old McDonald had a farm, and I'm supposed to be an old white 65-year-old man out here with my pitchfork and coveralls, right? Because that's what we always saw growing up. And now that millennial farmers are getting more involved in the conversation, but I think they don't understand that, you know, for the past 65 years or the past, before we had social media, farmers were too busy farming. You're not going to see my 65 or 68-year-old dad out on social media advocating for agriculture, because they've just now realized what social media is. And now I feel like farmers are kind of playing catch up, if that makes sense, to the dialogue that's going on about agriculture, because we've been out here, you know, too busy farming. And now it's up to millennial farmers like myself and other folks who are out here advocating for agriculture to kind of connect the consumer back to the farm and, you know, not picking winners and losers in agriculture. I feel like farmers fight that all the time. Like, oh, I raise my pigs this way. This is the only way to do it. You know, I think every farm is different. I think every farm looks different. I think everybody's production style is different, and that's okay. That's what feeds the world, and especially the population that's supposed to double by 2050. You know, I don't raise my hogs on the ground. I appreciate people that do. We started out that way. I raise my hogs in barns, and that's for the betterment of my hogs specifically, but we don't have the land and capacity and the space to raise all these animals on the ground. Yeah. And they live a healthy, very prosperous lifestyle the way that I raise, you know, my livestock indoors. But I feel sometimes farmers get built, you know, they're the villains, you know. Yeah. I'm fighting half my battle is convincing people that I'm not working to try and kill them. You know, I'm feeding people.
I think you're right. I mean, I think farmers are vilified, but I also think there's a disconnect, right?
Absolutely.
From where people's food actually comes from. They don't quite understand the process. And to your point, I think there is sort of a traditional, stereotypical way that the average person sees farming. I certainly, even prior to meeting you, I think the first time I met you, I said, you don't look like the normal farmer, you know.
And
yeah, I think the first day I met you. So And honestly, in today's time, I will say that, you know, that can even be perceived as bias, gender bias, especially in today's time, the way things work. So, you know, I do think the your comments around farmers and this next generation of farmers being more proactive about how they educate and engage the community at large around how the process works, the supply chain, and how it operates. That greater education could certainly lead to people hopefully having a better understanding of the price they see on the shelf when they walk inside their store. And then also the amount of work and dedication that had to go into actually providing you with a quality, you know, safe to eat item inside that grocery store. With that said, Marlo, I'm getting ready to run out of time. I want to hit on one last question before we go, because this whole spike in the price of eggs really caused me to think about this. I thought about this as well, even last year when we just saw a huge spike in the price of chicken itself. You know, you've got families of four, sometimes five, who live in these large cities, whether it's Charlotte, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, High Point, so forth. Again, I said it before, completely disconnected from the process in terms of where their food comes from. And this whole spike in the price of eggs and food shortages made me wonder, I mean, how close could we be to just a breakdown in society and order connected to our food, right? I mean, like somebody like you, you've got a skill and a talent. If all of it broke loose out here tomorrow, you probably would know how to produce your own food and take care of your family. There's a lot of people living in bigger cities that are completely disconnected from the process that wouldn't even know where to start if we went through something like that.
I mean, honestly, if I'm, you know, speaking honestly, I think we're almost there. I think, you know, for my county, which is Wayne County, North Carolina, the average household income here is less than $25,000 a year, average income. So when they go to the grocery store and they're looking to buy a carton of eggs and they're seeing the price increase, we're talking about being able to feed your family or not. You know, they don't have the luxury of having a disposable income to spend that much money on food. They want a safe, healthy, nutritious product. And, you know, the standard or the conventional way to raise eggs gets that price point to the grocery store. But yet you have other states setting these certain rules and specifications. At the end of the day, that's affecting families that might necessarily be able to afford to pay $6 for a carton of eggs. There's a really good book. I heard a woman speak. I think it's $2 a day. And she talks a lot about having the only thing that she could afford to feed her family was eggs. And when Massachusetts changed that law with Prop 12, it increased the average egg that was coming into the grocery store. It really affected her being able to feed her family. So yeah. I think people need to realize that not everybody has the luxury to buy the premium source of organic, you know, eggs or that they don't have that opportunity. I know the people that I'm, you know, interact with on a daily basis can't afford to pay. They need to know that what they're getting as a conventional level is safe and healthy and affordable, can afford to feed their families. So, I mean, I think it's a real reality. I think that might've gotten off the topic of people learning how to grow their own food, but I think this is an opportunity. If people want to start raising chickens in their backyard, I support it. I want you to see how hard it is. I mean, I felt hard. A lot of friends be like, you know, I'm going to get some chickens from my backyard and raise my own eggs. And I'm thinking to myself, great. See what we do every day. I think that's a great idea. Because it's all day, every day, 24/7.
Well, I will tell you, growing up, even in East Winston, this is so hard for people to believe, but very true. We had chickens. We had an urban farm. My grandmother and grandfather had chickens. We grew peppers and tomatoes. I mean, we grew peaches. We grew a lot of things right in a neighborhood that was right in the middle of the city, not even the best part of the city, on the east side of town. And the only time we ate eggs, it came from our chickens. And the only time we had fried chicken was when my grandmother slaughtered one of those chickens. And yeah. And so I'm very familiar with that process. I hear your passion and I echo it. I totally agree with you. I often tell people some of these social concerns and some of these environmental values that get placed on society oftentimes get balanced on the backs of some of the poorest people in the community, whether it's concerns about energy or transportation or even agriculture. All these different policies that get initiated, oftentimes it's the least of us who are actually paying the greatest price for those policies. So I think we need common sense and balanced approaches to how we deal with some of these real, real issues that are out there. Marlo, I always appreciate you being willing to lock in with me and help us better understand what's going on with our food. Especially right now, the biggest conversation is around the price of food. And so I would again encourage my audience, go check out the Carolina Journal, because this week I will have an op-ed dropping that talks a little bit more about the soaring price of eggs and some of the underlying variables that are driving it higher. We appreciate Marlo sharing some of her knowledge. Marlo, real quick, you've got an organization where people can learn more about some of the great farming work being done here in North Carolina. Share that real quickly.
Sure. It's a nonprofit called Feed the Dialogue NC Foundation, which Feed the Dialogue's mission is to educate people about food production and where your food comes from. So we talk about all things, why are eggs so high? You know, any kind of food issues that's related going on in agriculture right now is we're here to open, have an open dialogue and kind of bridge the gap between the consumer and the farmer. So we're an educational nonprofit. You can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. We provide educational videos for people that are concerned about these issues and concerned about where their food comes from, showing a lot of food production going on right now. So please check us out at ncfeedthedialogue.com and Feed the Dialogue NC Foundation.
You know, I encourage my audience to go check them out, Feed the Dialogue, but also make sure you're tuned to WTOB every Sunday morning, because that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, of course, I want you to subscribe and download the podcast. That's available on Apple, Pandora, Spotify, wherever you like to find your favorite podcast. You can lock in with me there, but then also make sure you continue to follow Algernon Cash on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.